All right, hi, my name is Keito Uchiyama. Today I'm going to be talking about scraping data from the internet. And what do I mean by scraping? Scraping is the act of programmatically reading in data from a website. So imagine getting stock quotes from Yahoo like you did in problem set 7, or news from Google News like you did in problem set 8. So those weren't scraping because you had an API or a CSV file to work from, which you could just use using very simple methods that you learned in problem set 7 and 8. However, if we use data scraping, we can actually use this with any website. So you can get your data from a recipe website, for example. You can get it from, there are so many movie times, store coupons, HUD's menus, weather forecasts, encyclopedia articles, and even entire books that you can just parse from the internet. Is everyone familiar with what an API is? What does it stand for? Application Programming Interface, that's correct. It's basically an interface between the application, whether that's a website, say for example Facebook has an API, many other websites have an API, and your application. So there's sort of this bridge between the two. But if you don't have something like that, if you don't have something like a platform or an API, then you can use data scraping to get any data from any website on the internet. Because if you can get it by going to your web browser and then just browsing through the web pages, then why can't your program, right? Your program is just like a web browser. It's just like any other program. So there's no question of why it might not work. So how to scrape data? And there are basically two steps. First, you fetch the data from the source. And second, you parse the raw source, which will be HTML. Because all pages on the internet, most of them are HTML, to get the data you need. And you can use this, you can parse the data either by using something called regular expressions, which I don't know if this was covered in CS50. It was definitely used in PSET 8 when, if you remember the footnote on one of the pages on the problem set where it said, how can I validate that the user's input was correct? And you remember PREG match? That was regular expressions. So any memories of PREG match or not so much? Okay. And you can also use a tree. So this is very similar to what you used for. So there weren't any problem sets based on this, but you can actually parse raw HTML using something called a DOM parser or a SAX parser. These are ways to programmatically parse trees. Because HTML is a tree, right? If you begin with the HTML element, you get down into head, then you go back and you go into body, and then you have H1 or div or p. These are all elements in the tree. So you can use that kind of parsing. Today we're going to talk about using regular expressions. It's much more likely that the website you are trying to parse is not correct HTML. Most people do not write correct HTML, and they mess it up. They don't end tags. They don't they have a tag that's closed before another one ends. There's a lot of misused HTML in the world, so regular expressions is your best bet if you're going to do any kind of parsing on a real world website. But you can also learn about trees as well. So first, I'm going to start with an example, a very quick example using weather.com. Let's use weather.com to get the current temperature in Cambridge. That sounds like it might be useful on, like a website or something else. So we're going to open up weather.php. The source code will be online, available online after the seminar. Can you see this? Is it too small? I can make it bigger. Nice. See, you're squinting. Is this better? Okay. So what am I doing here? First, I think it would be better if I actually went to weather.com and showed you how I can look up a zip code. So I can say I want the data, I want the weather for 02138. For Cambridge, I click search, and then I have this temperature here, 51 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the current weather. So what do I have? I have this page, and I have the HTML that's used to generate this page. Okay? So I have to take these two elements and somehow make them coherent, make them connect with each other. So I look at the URL. It says weather.com/weather/local/02138. And it turns out, after some experimentation, and you're going to have to do this if you're scraping any kind of dynamic website, it turns out that I can actually get rid of all the arguments. If you remember, the arguments in an HTTP request were everything after the question mark. You remember? So I can remove that. And then I hit enter. And then, voila, even with just weather slash local slash 02138, without all those arguments, I can still get the same page. So I can work from this because it seems pretty simple. I can just put a zip code after the slash local, and then I can get a temperature here. So what can I actually do? So let's look at the HTML of this page. Oops. And then, so you see here there's a lot of blank spaces. It doesn't look like the HTML, the clean HTML that you've been writing in your problem sets. That might be because, you know, they were just too lazy to write proper HTML. It might have been because they're explicitly trying to prevent you from scraping their data. It may be because they're using some kind of dynamic generation that causes this kind of spacing. But anyway, don't let that stop you. Just find 51 degrees Fahrenheit in the source code. And 51 is probably not a very good number to look for because it exists everywhere.
I can't see
51. Okay. That's fine. I'll point it out. Okay. So it looks like we have something here. Let's see. I'm trying to get this bigger. Oh, here we go. So can you see? Okay, so I found the string 51. It looks like it's in a B tag, a bold tag. 51 deg. Does anyone know what the and deg semicolon means? What does that mean? Have you seen this before in any other HTML page? So this is actually an HTML entity. And the most common one you've probably seen is and NBSP semicolon, which means a non-breaking space. And these are just used instead of the actual symbols themselves so that they can be effectively written down in code. So what that's doing is just generating a degrees sign here instead of the and deg. And so it says 51 degrees Fahrenheit and then feels like 51 degrees Fahrenheit. So what we can do, if we were a human, what would we do? If we were a human, how could we parse this, so to speak? Copy and paste, yeah, that's very good, which is exactly what we're going to do. We're going to take this string and then copy it. And then we're going to go into our code, and then you see here that I've actually pasted it here. It was 50 degrees Fahrenheit when I was writing this. So, okay, so that's a start. So now back to the code. What am I actually doing? It says on line 8, I'm getting the raw HTML from weather.com, and I'm written requires the PHPF open wrapper for HTTP, but the cloud and HCS both support it. So unless you're using some other environment, it should be fine. So what am I doing? I'm using file get contents. Have you seen this before? No? Okay, file get contents is basically a PHP function. It's very similar to fopen and fread in C. It's basically a wrapper around those functions. It opens the file, gets a file handle, and then pulls in that data into a string, which it returns. So what I'm doing here is I'm getting the contents of the URL, that URL. See here that it has 02138 at the end. So we're getting the weather page for Cambridge. And I'm putting that into the string WET. And then what am I doing? I'm running a regular expression on the source to find, for example, the code that we just pasted in. So you see here we have preg match. So preg match is a function that runs a regular expression on a string. And a regular expression is basically a fancy find function. So for example, if you've typed Control F in Microsoft Word or gone to find some text, it's basically a advanced version of that. And what am I using here? So it begins with a forward slash, and it ends with a forward slash, that's for sure. That's just something that's used in a regular expression. You have to begin and end the regular expression with some character. And that character is often the forward slash, or as we'll see in the later examples, an at symbol. So here I started off by pasting in this code, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, in between the two forward slashes in the string. Okay. And then what did I do? The only thing I did in this example, I did two things. So the first thing I did was I replaced the 50 with this backslash D plus wrapped in parentheses. Does anyone know what that means? Any? Maybe an integer. Maybe an integer. Yeah. So if you've in C, it was %d meant an integer, right? So in a regular expression, backslash d represents one figure. So any number from 0 to 9. And then, so if you've been following the problem set 8 closely, backslash d plus I think was one of the strings used in the problem set. To validate valid integers. For example, you couldn't buy -1 stocks or 1.2 stocks, right? You could only buy whole numbers. And so here's what I'm doing the same thing here. I'm saying it matches a backslash d, which is a digit, plus. Plus means one or more times. And I'll show you a reference which you can use to actually remember these or look them up when you need to. Backslash d plus means, so what does backslash d plus mean? If backslash d means one digit and plus means one or more, what does the whole thing mean? It's easy. What does it mean? It is a positive integer. Yeah. So it's not at least two digits because plus means one or more. It means backslash d occurs one or more times. So it basically means any number from 0 to 99999999. Okay, so yeah, so it is a positive number. So you'll see that this, yeah, so you've just pointed out a bug in my code. It actually doesn't work if the temperature falls below negative, which I hope it doesn't, but it will. I've replaced that part with this. Oh, and the parentheses, what do the parentheses mean? They're actually just wrapping a portion of regular expression in parentheses means that you can use it to match stuff. So The CS51, the problem set 8.1 might not have actually had the parentheses because you don't need them unless you're matching things. And in this case, we are matching things because we want to match the temperature. And so what I'm doing is I've said that 50 part or that number part should be one of the matches that I find in my regular expression. And then one more thing is that I've escaped the forward slash before the b, because in this regular expression, in this particular example, the forward slash is special because it's the end regular expression character. So that's why I've escaped it. You're familiar with escaping, right? You needed to do it for things in C, for example. If you wanted the literal digit, literal string backslash n to print in your printf statements, you had to do backslash backslash n. To escape the backslash n. Does that make sense? Stop me if you have any questions, okay? Or if you're confused. Okay. What this is doing is that it's matching that temperature part and then putting that into this matches array. And then it's returning the oneth element of the matches array. The zeroth element is actually the entire string that matched. So you don't want to use the zeroth one, you want to use the first one. And if you get confused, what you want to use, then you can say var dump matches, and this will just print out the array that you asked for. All right, so the array here, this is the array. The matches 0, it's probably too small. Matches 0 is, as you can see, it's the whole thing that matched. It's 51 degrees Fahrenheit. And 1 is 51, the thing that was in the parentheses in the regular expression. Okay? Does that make sense? And if you have multiple things wrapped in parentheses, you'll have matches 1, matches 2, matches 3 that match each of those parentheses, those parenthetical expressions. Okay? So that's Preg match. That's a very simple use case of it. And you can see here that our code worked. The current weather in 0238 is 51 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so that's weather.php. Any questions about this? No? Okay. So I'd like to look at another example. Hollis. So are you all familiar with the Hollis search? They recently revamped it over the summer. It's the tool that you use to search library materials at Harvard. So let's try using the new Hollis to get some data about library materials. This time, the regular expression is a bit more complicated, so you'll have to bear with me with the actual syntax. But the code itself is very similar, and it's pretty useful if you're creative about it. So okay, let's go to Let's first go to the Hollis search. And so let's search for a book. I don't know, what do you want to search for?
Black Beauty.
Pardon?
Black Beauty.
Black Beauty? Okay, I don't know what that is.
Black Beauty.
Black Beauty? Okay. All right, we have some books about Black Beauty. So it turns out, after some perusing of this website, that the actual results load in a frame. And it's pretty obvious, I realized later, when the whole thing scrolls. So you have to, the results open in a frame, meaning that the actual post request was sent to the thing in the frame. So you don't want to look at the source code for discovery.lib.harvard.edu, because that's not going to help you. You see, there are no arguments there, meaning that the search wasn't performed there. The actual search was performed inside the frame, and with Firefox you can go to this frame, show only this frame. And then it'll open up the frame itself, and you can see here that the URL is obviously more complicated because it has our actual query, and it has these results. Okay, so let's look at the query. You can see it's ASHX, meaning it's Microsoft.net. And then there are actually two things that seem like the query. And this, when you're making your own website or program, you'll want to just experiment by yourself. The concept says Black Beauty. And let's try changing that to Blue Beauty, and you'll see that nothing changes. That means that concept was not the actual query string in this URL. But you see here, if you scroll to the end, you'll see the second one called Q. And this seems like www.google.com/search?q, right? It's a very commonly used argument name, Q. So we can change this. If we change this to Blue Beauty, not sure if that'll pop up any results. So it has one Korean art book, and then has some other ones about beauty. So you see here that if you change the result of ?q equals, it'll actually change what you get back from Hollis. So now you can get your creative juices flowing and see how you could possibly use this to your benefit. You know, you might think of a new way to search Hollis. You might think of an indexing mechanism for Hollis. You know, there are infinite possibilities with this scraping. So let's look in the source code to see what this is, what this page actually looks like in the code. So let's see. So we're going to actually search for one of the titles, since that's going to help with our finding, our manual finding. Yeah. Okay. Oops. All right. So let's search for one of the titles. You might have to narrow it down a little bit. Okay. So here, this is the title of our first book, and it seems that it's actually in this div class title new, and that contains one a tag, and it has a bunch of things in the href, and then a bunch of things in the onclick tag, which we can ignore because it's not related to what we're looking for. And then after the a tag, right after the a tag, inside the anchor tag, is the actual title of the page, of the book or the library material. And it has some HTML tags inside of it, but we can ignore that for now. So it looks like everything in between this weird forward slash that they use and the end of the a tag and the beginning of the actual a tag body is the title that we're looking for. So what can we do? Anyone have any ways we can possibly go forward with this? Like, how can we find the title of a book in this HTML? Like, think back to the weather.com example. Any ideas?
First, you want to find that div, mm-hmm. the title new div.
Yeah.
Or all the title new divs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So first, you want to find the title new div, or actually all of them, because there are lots of, if there are 10 results, there are 10 title news. So we can do that. And then we can, you know, we can begin to narrow it down. We can see if the A matches. We can ignore the href and onclick. I'll show you how. And then we can find the title. So it seems like a very easy regular expression job. And it is. If you go into hollis.php, first of all, so this is a script that takes a get argument of its own. Don't confuse this with the queue of Hollis. This is the queue of this script. then I'm doing some validation. And then here, what am I doing? I'm doing the same thing that I did in weather.php, file get contents of the URL. And you'll see that this very, at the end, here's the crucial q equals and q equals here. And then I've concatenated URL and code query onto it. Query is the get parameter that I got from the script, but that's not really related to scraping. URL and code is necessary because if you get some data from the user, for example, if the user typed in black beauty, then if you try to send that to the as a URL, it might fail. If it's space, it shouldn't, but if it's another special character, it will. What it should be is black %20 beauty. %20 is the HTML entity for a space character. And you don't need to remember this because the URL encode function in PHP does this for you. So whenever you create a URL programmatically, when you concatenate, for example, these arguments with another argument, you want to enclose the argument that you're adding with URL encode. So that'll replace any of the special characters that are in your dollar query variable. Okay. So that's not that different. Here I have a new regex. Regex is short for regular expression. So this regular expression is a bit different. See here, it has these at symbols instead of the forward slash. That's because there is a forward slash here. So if you don't want to escape things, for example, if the forward slash is actually used for something, you probably want to use some other symbol. And the at symbol is probably the second most popular symbol to use there. So here, what am I doing? So I said I wanted to ignore href, href, and onclick, these tags, because they don't really contain data that we want to use. We just want the title in this case. So what have I done? I've got these weird square brackets. Square brackets, and hat, and then double quotes, and then plus. So this looks very confusing. Does anyone know what this means?
Well, the hat, the caret there, mm-hmm. Means not.
Yeah, that's right. The caret means it's a negation. And the square brackets here is called a character class. So it means that anything any character within matches. But because we have the caret, it means anything within the character doesn't match. Anything within the character class doesn't match. So a double quote will not match. It means one or more. Remember, the plus is one or more. One or more non-double quote characters match. Okay. So why do I have this non-double quote character business? What's this for? Why don't I want to match a double quote?
Because that marks the end of the URL within the href.
Right, yeah. So whatever's inside the href is delimited by double quotes. So if I matched a double quote, I would potentially match the end of this attribute. So I want to limit it to whatever's just inside the double quote. So I want to say, if it's not a double quote, keep on eating up characters. And that's what this precisely does. The href eats up characters up to the double quote, so it means I'll accept anything that's in the href, and I'll also accept anything that's in the onClick attribute, because we saw that the source code had weird values for href and onClick. But we'll match the title. So now this is more regular expressions here. This is two parts. Backslash s. Can anyone guess what this means? Backslash s? White space, yeah. Backslash s stands for white space, and it's any space character. So spaces, returns, new lines, and they all match with backslash s. And this asterisk, it's very similar to the plus operator, but this is zero or more characters. So it could be no spaces between the end of this tag and the beginning of, and this regular expression. So it means match any spaces. And I've done that because if we go back to our source code, we'll see that... So it's not in this example, but let's see. Okay, so that's weird. Before I did have to do that because there was a space between the title itself and the end of the tag, but you know.
Would it really be that big a deal if those spaces were included in mm-hmm. what was matched?
The question was: would it really matter if we did match the spaces as well? And the answer is it really doesn't, because PHP has a very useful trim function that lets you strip away the spaces from either side of the the string. So if you have, say, space, 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 hello, space, 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 if you run trim on that string, it'll return hello. So that's a very useful function that you'll probably want to use in your scraping as well. So that matches any number of spaces. And this matches, what does this match? What's the dot? Does anyone remember? In PHP, the dot means concatenation. But in the regular expression, dot has a different meaning. It means any character. So it means match any character one or more times. Okay. So this is the one thing that it's matching. It's matching dot any character one or more times as the title. Okay. So it's any number of spaces followed by one or more one or more title characters, one or more characters. Okay. So you see here that you can imagine that. So since we're putting the regex in this preg match all, this is slightly different from preg match. A preg match all, as the name suggests, matches all results instead of just the one, because preg match will only give you the first find that it finds first. Yeah, first match that it finds. So what we're doing here is we're probably matching this the title part, and it seems to make sense, right? Does this make sense? I hope it does. and then if we don't find anything, if preg match all, if you look at the PHP manual, returns the number of matches. So if it doesn't match anything, if the result is zero, then it'll say no matches found. Okay. So let's actually try running this program and see if this works. So let's go to hollis.php. And as you can see, the input validation works if I don't type a query. So I can type a query. I can try Google, then enter. And then you can see it works. Ta-da. It says the following titles matched a query for Google, and it has all the titles that were from Hollis. So this is scraping. I'm getting the titles from Hollis, and without a web browser, too. Without a web browser on the server. So does this make sense to everyone? Like the general flow of things, regular expressions? Okay, so that's Hollis, and I don't know if anyone's working on a Hollis project, but I know people in recent years have. So it's always something nice to hack. All right, so the next thing. So getting serious. So if that wasn't serious enough, we sometimes have to ditch file get contents because it's not very useful if, for example, you want more control over your HTTP requests. Remember that data scraping is all about being a web browser. It's about pretending to be a web browser on the server. You know, your server might not have a monitor that you can access, but you can still access HTTP. You can still access HTML pages from your server, and that's what data scraping is doing in its first step of fetching data from the server. So you want more control over HTTP requests. You'll have to ditch file get contents because file get contents just supports one URL and that's it. You need to spoof a real web browser, and this actually happens. I don't know if it still does it, but the HUID pin system, if you tried to scrape it, it would complain if you didn't spoof a real web browser. So if you unless you spoof a web browser, the PHP will tell the program that it's actually that it's called PHP. So all web browsers on the internet send what's called a user agent string. So if I, on my Firefox instance, go to google.com, Google will know that I'm using Mozilla Firefox 3.6 beta 2. And it'll know that I'm using a Macintosh and various other details about my browser. And that's just standard practice. And a lot of websites actually check this to make sure that you're not scraping. So scraping is, I won't talk about the legal details of scraping, but I think it's legal, but it's sort of hidden. So sometimes you need to spoof a real web browser to make sure that the site gives you what you want. And also, if you want to send cookies or post variables, for example, if you need to log someone in first, so if the website that you're scraping needs a login before it'll give you data, you'll need to actually use something called curl, which we'll see. C-U-R-L. And you can look at the source code here, the manual here, php.net/curl. Okay, so I'm going to take a look at the example curl.php. So this is a bit more code, not necessarily more complicated, but it's just more code. And it does the exact same thing. So if we go it does exactly the same thing as weather.php. So remember that weather.php just displayed the current temperature in 02138. Curl.php does the same. So it looks like nothing has changed, but behind the hood, a lot has changed. We're no longer using file get contents, so this part of the code is different. From line 8 to line 20 is different. So what am I doing? These things you don't need to remember. These are just from the manual. $ch curl init returns like a it's similar to a file handle like returned by fopen. Curl init basically returns an instance of curl. So curl is actually a library of functions that let you fetch data from the internet using various methods, and it supports almost all HTTP methods. So you see here you have curl setopt. You have a bunch of three calls to curl setopt, and this lets you set some options in curl, set some advanced options in curl that let you customize what curl does. So the first one is curl opt URL. Remember that we're specifying the instance by doing $ch, the variable that we assigned the result of curl init to. And then we're setting the URL to whatever we want to get. So we want to get the weather for 02138 from weather.com, so we're using that as the third argument to curl setopt for curl opt URL. And then the second one is what we've been talking about. This is curl opt user agent, and I just copied the user agent from my own browser. And so this means that curl, when it's called, will pretend that it's Mozilla 5.0. It'll pretend that it's Firefox. Okay. So even though it's not actually Firefox, it's just curl. It's your own script. It's pretending to be Firefox, and you can set this user agent to anything you want. Although if you need to get around user agent filters, you'll have to specify an actual web browser's user agent, and you can do a Google search for user agent string or something like that, and it'll give you user agent string examples. So another option that I'm setting here, curl opt return transfer true. You'll see that if you don't set this option to true, when you call curl exec, which is when you actually execute the curl fetch request, it'll return 0 if it failed or 1 if it succeeded, true or false. And you can see this on the PHP manual. But if you set true, it'll return the transfer being the actual contents of the response from the web browser as your return value. So I've set that to true. So what's $ret going to have? $ret equals curl exec true, and we've set the return transfer to true. So $ret will have what? It'll get the transfer, the actual content of the response. So at that stage, it's very similar to file get contents, because file get contents returns the body of the text that it returned, that it found as a string, and $ret will have the same kind of data. And we have to close curl too. This is similar to free after malloc in C. You have to free resources that you used. And if ret equals 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 false, then we return we error message. Does anyone know what equals 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 means in PHP? Not to be confused with equals equals. I see you sighing. Do you know?
I forget. I mean, it's like beyond equivalence.
Yeah,
it's super equivalence.
Right. It's beyond equivalence, super equivalence. What that means is it's not. If I said $ret equals equals false, then 0 would match. An empty string would match. An empty array would match. These are all considered false by PHP. But equals 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 means the actual value false. And I do this because the return transfer from curl might actually be an empty string, right? I might actually get an empty page from the website. It's perfectly valid to have that. So I want to distinguish between a blank website and an error in curl. And that's why I do equals 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 false. That means make sure that it equals equals false, and that it also matches the type Boolean, true or false. Anyway, that's an aside. So I'm renaming ret to wet. Don't know why I chose that. I think it's because it was weather. So now I'm running a regular expression. This is the same code as in weather.php. So basically, I've expanded one line file get contents into these, 12 lines, 11 lines of code. So why did I do that? Well, the only addition I really have is the user agent string. And this might be useful for your own scraping. OK, does that make sense? Any questions about that? No? OK, so this is where it gets sort of exciting, hopefully very exciting. We want to simulate a login session. So if you've, you remember from CS50 Finance, you had to log in before you get someone's portfolio data, right? Obviously, you don't want to be able to look up any stranger's portfolio. So what this does is what this example that I'm going to show you does is it simulates a login. It simulates a user typing in their username and password and hitting submit and then going to another page to get data. So you need at least two requests, one to log the user in. So if you remember login2.php, that was the endpoint for the form that took the username and password and actually logged the user in and created a PHP session, though that was sort of hidden in PSET 7, thanks to the course code. And then the second step you have to do is you have to fetch the data that requires the login. So for example, the portfolio, index.php and CS50 finance would be what you return, what you request in the second request. And then between these two requests, this is very important, you need to preserve cookies. Cookies are what store the session ID, so that they store who you are, you know, what identity you have. So if you lose the identity between these two requests, between logging the user in and fetching the data that actually requires that login, you're going to end up with an error in the second one because you'll be asked to log in again, right? The only reason why, if you go to Internet Explorer or Firefox and you click, you know, you log into Facebook and then the next page, profile.php, actually shows your profile is because you've actually logged in and the cookie that determines who you are, that says, you know, this user is such and such, is propagated to the second request. So unless you have that one ID that represents the two requests, you're going to end up with a logged out error message. So that's why you need to preserve the cookies between the two. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so to simulate a login session, I'm going to actually test this with a real website that I have. I'm going to test this with a version of CS50 Finance, but for another class called CS75 Finance. This is very similar to CS50 Finance. So I'm going to tell you the username and password. It's scrape test and scraper. And then I click login. And then, you know, just as in CS50 Finance, you get the portfolio, right? $10,000. It also turns out that you can actually gamble in this version. You lost cash. Okay, anyway. This is scrape test's portfolio. So you can see that if I want to get the how much cash scrape test has, then I need to do login first, right? So how do I achieve this? So if I go to, let's see, cookies.php, I have, so the general overview of this file is that I have two requests, two curl requests. First, I log into CS75 Finance. And then in the second request, we actually get the user's portfolio. Okay, so there are two requests, one to get the login page and one to get the actual data. Remember from the slides. So what do I do? First, I log into CS75 Finance, very similar to the previous examples. I set the URL to login.php in line 10. I then set the user agent, though my script doesn't really check for that. And then I have these post fields, curl set opt, curl opt post is true. What this means is that instead of setting a get request, it sends a post request. And the login form was a post request, right? How do I know? How can I tell that it's a post request?
Because after you logged in, you didn't see your information in the address
right.
bar.
Yeah, so after I logged in, there was no information in the address bar, which there would have been if it was a get request. I can also tell by looking at the source code. And you should do this if you're doing your own scraping. So let's go to the login page, and then you'll see that the form that I use to sign people in is this form action. It goes to login.php. So instead of login.php going to login2.php, which was the CS50 kind of paradigm, I'm using the same script to do both. And I achieve this by setting a hidden field called A with the value login when I actually log someone in. So that's how it determines if there's no A set, then it shows the login form. If there is an A set, then it'll log the user in. So it's just a different way of implementing login. See, the method is post, so you are right. You have to post this request. And then I have two fields, username and password. So it looks like if I set username and password and then hit, and then set A to login, I can log the user in. So that's precisely what I'm doing here. Let's see. So set post-related settings. I'm setting the request to post. And then I'm setting these three fields. Username is scrape test. Password is scraper. And the action A is login. So this is a associative array of three elements that I've saved in $data. Okay. And then what I do with those, I call curl set opt with curl opt post fields. So this sets the post fields, the fields that I'm going to post. from dollar data, and then that means that basically I'm going to do a post request with these three arguments. Okay, pretty simple, right? And then this is pretty important. I need to actually save the cookies that I get back from the browser. So how it works is that I ask the website to log me in, and then the website, if it deems my login valid, it'll give me a cookie. A big number. And I actually need to save that big number somewhere. And curl makes it very easy for you to do this. If you set curl opt cookie jar, it's pretty nice, cookie file.txt, what this is doing is it's saving all cookies that it receives from this curl request into this cookie file.txt file. Okay? And I can show you that this actually works. If we go to, cookies.php, and I run this. Okay, so let's ignore that for now. Then go to cookie file.txt. You can see here that my cookie was actually generated with the domain, some attributes, and then chocolate chip was the name of the session ID for some reason. And then the thing after that is the long user ID that specifies your session. So that's your own session that tells you that you're logged, that tells the website that you're logged in. So if we go back to
Cookie file.txt have to already exist for curl to use it?
The question was, does the cookie file.txt need to exist before it before you call it? And the answer is no. Cookie jar, if you set the cookie jar option, it'll create it if it can. So obviously, if you have permission set so that you can't, then you need to. But yeah, you don't need to. So now we see here that we're calling curl exec with that with the login request. And then I simply close it. And then I just check for red equals 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 false. And if it returns false, then I probably couldn't log the user in because the curl request failed. Now, I don't know if the username and password were correct in this case. And you'd have to do some more scraping to determine whether you got a request, got an error back from curl. Okay. So assuming that we're logged in, and we'll assume so, we can try getting the user's portfolio. And I'll ignore the rest of the curl options because they're the same as any other of the examples that I've shown you. But this, from line 39 to 40, I have two options here. I set the cookie jar. So the cookie jar is basically where the cookies go into, and the cookie file is where the cookies come from. So I've named them a bit, I've named them both cookie file, and it should be the same file if you're trying to maintain the session across multiple requests. So cookie file will say cookie, setting the cookie file means read the cookies from cookiefile.txt. And then setting cookie jar means if I get any new cookies from the request that I just made to the portfolio, save them in cookiefile.txt. So I can use the same files. It just means that I have the same cookie store, just like your web browser has the same cookie jar for all requests. So it's usually you probably want to specify the same file for cookie file and cookie jar. Okay? And then I just return the transfer again. And then I do some parsing on it. So you'll see here that so you said you wanted to parse tables, and this is how you do it. If you log in and then look at the source code for the portfolio, you'll see that, this is part of a table. An HTML table, you'll see that it's actually a table data, col span 2, and it says cache, and then the actual amount of cache is in the second table data cell after that, in the table data cell after that. Okay, so let's just copy this part from this into this, our script and sort of coax it into being a regular expression. So I've done just that. Again, I'm using at symbols here instead of the forward slash because the forward slash is used by the TD end tag, and I don't want to mess with escaping because that gets ugly very quickly. So I have almost the same kind of HTML here, except this part is replaced with this. Now, what is this? You guys should be able to tell what this is now. So there's a character class here. What does this not match?
Character but an open bracket?
Yeah, any character but an open bracket because I don't want to match this one, right? Makes sense, right? And then it's one or more of those, any character but not the beginning square bracket. And then I enclose that in a match parenthetical expression. So it's very similar to the examples that I've shown you in that it'll match the actual dollar amount, and then it'll put it in matches 1, because matches 0 is the entire string that matched. And then it'll display you currently have whatever the dollar amount they got from the portfolio was in your portfolio. So let's see if that works, and it actually did work. See, you currently have $7,163. So this is a more complicated example of scraping because you first logged in and then you tried to get the data from the website. Does that make sense? Any questions? No? Okay. So let's see. All right. So can we scrape the queue? Is anyone planning to scrape the queue guide? No. So if you wanted to scrape the queue guide, which incidentally changed this year to make it harder to, and it's harder to scrape this year. And it's really, really hard to scrape the queue guide because mainly because it uses the Harvard PIN login. And to scrape the PIN login, I've tried it, and it's really hard. It's because there's a lot of cookies going forward and back. You have to navigate to particular URLs, and you don't know what they are. And it's really because you shouldn't be scraping the PIN login. But if you really want to, I can get you started. So let's go to the queue guide. So let's look at archaeology 1130, anthropology 1130. So if I log out and go to this page again, you'll see that it's actually a HUID protected website. So that's the beginning of your troubles. If you go into Firebug, which I hope you've installed, if you go to the form, you'll see that this is a form that, you know, this is a weird URL, pin1.harvard.edu, that goes to, where does it go to? It goes to /pin/submit login here. So somehow you're going to have to look through the multitude of pages that the pin redirects you to actually successfully scrape the pin system. And after you've scraped the pin system, you want to scrape the queue guide. But I don't know if that's worth your time because it's really icky to do that kind of thing with the HUID system. But if you do, then the examples that I've shown you so far will get you there. Because I mean, if your web browser can successfully log into the Harvard HUID PIN system, there's no reason your scraping script can't do the same either. It's just up to you to do the right curling, to do the right regexes, and to do to figure out the right URLs. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So a real example. I actually used a lot of data scraping for my own CS50 final project 2 years ago, which was crimsondining.org, which shows you the menu for HUDs. So it's basically an alternate interface to HUDs data. So this is the breakfast menu for tomorrow because dinner has already ended today. I'm hungry. But this just shows you the menu items. And the stars on the right are just what my application adds. But this data is actually retrieved from HUDs itself, the HUDs website. So if we go to the HUDs website, let's see. I know a lot of people were thinking of scraping HUDs. So if you look at all of today's menu, this is not the right one. Let's see. OK, so it looks like they changed the actual menu that they link to. But there is a listing of menu items. And this one works because it shows you more than what it used to, which is shows you the vegan and the vegetarian options. So it's pretty useful. And you might imagine having a final project that scrapes this, right? So that's what I did for my final project. And it's also a Facebook application, so it shows you your menu on your Facebook profile, and it does a bunch of other things like statistics, which are pretty cool because, like, for example, you can say that whip topping is actually the most prolific dish in the HUDs menu because it appears so much. And, well, there's a big dip here in 2008-08 in August, of course, because there's no school. And so basically my script has been running since October 2007, and it's been running every day since then. So it just knows about all the data since then. So it knows what's the movers and shakers of HUDs menus and organic pasta sauces never fails to be popular. Anyway, so this actually uses a lot of scraping because it's actually just scraping the menu from HUDs. The statistics I've are managed by my own database that that you know figure out how often a dish has appeared and such. So I'll actually show you the source code for what mine does. Incidentally, if you want to scrape HUDs data, and if you're only if your objective is to scrape HUDs data, you can use David Malin's I think Harvard Food API or something that he created a couple of days ago when I was taking some time to create my own API out of this. So anyway, this is I'll show you this. If you're interested in actual HUDs scraping, you probably want to use David's. But if you just want to see scraping, then you can look at my source code. And if you know, you might if you want to improve, if you want more data than in his API, then you might want to you know build on this or you know do whatever. So there's a lot of code here that I've written, but I'll show you what will probably look very familiar to you. So this function here at the very end is get HUDs menu. So what does it do? It sets a lock string, which is a URL, foodpro.huds.harvard.edu. This is basically the menu. And this, you see this function takes the year, month, day, and type. You can ignore the type, but year, month, and day, that's important, right? And what it does is it sets the month, day, and year in the URL. So basically, it's the same as like setting 02138ingweather.com's URL or setting the Hollis search URL, right? You basically have the first step in scraping is that you have to create the URL that will give you the data that you want. So I do just that, get the month, day, year, and then I do curl init. You know, these very familiar, right? The same curl opt URL option, same curl opt return transfer option. I do that. I get the raw menu in a curl exec operation, and then I curl close. And so the get HUDs menu, this function will get me, okay, so here I have some real world stuff that I needed to do. If there was no menu, so for example, it was not Thanksgiving, but if it was like during breaks, it'll say no data available. So I check for that explicitly too. And you probably want to do this in your own scraping scripts too. So check for error conditions, because you won't always get the data that you want. And then it does some fallbacks to ensure that it can always get the data because that's very important. And it'll return the raw menu. So the only this doesn't actually do any scraping per se. It doesn't do any regular expressions. It just gets the data from HUDs. And I have a separate function called parse HUDs menu that actually does the dirty work of parsing data. And so you know it's the concepts that I've used are very similar to what I've seen shown in the examples. Preg replace is actually a different regular expression function that replaces certain things. So I want to replace all images in the menu with blank. So I want to get rid of all images so that it's easier for me to parse. And then I have some explosions here. Explode is a function in PHP that lets you take a string. And for example, if the string is like red, comma, blue, comma, green, if you run explode on that with a divider of comma, give you an array, red being the first element, green, blue, etc. So explode is very useful when you're scraping because it lets you explode elements from strings into arrays depending on some set separator. And so divider 2 is something that's specified above. It's actually this string here on line 15. And basically, this TD appears multiple times in the menu, and it shows you what element it is, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So you might want to use explode in this way instead of regular expressions to divide specific parts of the HTML that you're scraping, if that's necessary. So there's a lot of other code here. You know, it checks for if it's Sunday, and if it's Sunday, then it'll replace lunch with brunch, et cetera, et cetera. So it's you know it's all HUDs specific. The real meat is in parse submenu, which is another function here. And then you see here our old friend preg match all. It'll match some things in a bold tag and these UL tags, these unordered lists that are in the HTML. And you know you can read the source code to see what it actually does, but it's just a very glorified version of the examples that we've been seeing in this seminar. Okay. Any questions about that? No. Any questions about anything at all? Anything about scraping? No.
Are there any resources that you would recommend in terms of like
Yeah, that was actually my next slide. Yeah, so the question was, are there any resources and that you can look for examples and other reference materials? So I have a few references here. The PHP manual is very useful. There's good documentation there. You can look up preg match all, obviously, because those are your regular expression functions. Curl exec and curl setopt for curl. You can look those up in the site. And Perl-compatible regular expressions, which is what's used by preg match and preg match all. So this website is very useful, regularexpressions.info. I learned my regular expressions from a handbook published by O'Reilly. But if you can get that kind of book from the library, it's very much, even if you get a really old book, it's still very much valid. You can also look at this very pretty website. And Firebug is your friend in dissecting websites. So what I meant to show you when I looked at the queue guide was that I showed you some ways of using Firebug, but you can also use the net tab in Firebug to show what kind of requests are being made to the server. So if, for example, if you want to try scraping AJAX, Firebug will certainly be your friend because it tells you what requests are being made by JavaScript. And these requests you can't usually see by just looking at the code. Well, it's really hard to. And as for references to resources for examples, I don't have any examples beyond what I provided. I Googled around on the internet, but it doesn't seem like there's like a big library of how to scrape websites.
Yeah,
it's besides the point. But my belief is that the examples that I've shown you will get you enough. It's that it's enough examples to get you far and get you far enough to complete your 50 final project. But so if you have any questions about PHP, PHP manual, always a good look at. Regular expressions, that website is good. And looking at Firebug using tools like that is great too. OK, so thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'll stick around.